It is my pleasure to introduce our guest this morning. Kathy Stills is a marriage and family therapist and the executive director of Hope House. Before last night, I did not know what Hope House was, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about it right now. Hope House addresses the behaviors and the emotions behind addiction. Clients learn a variety of tools to help them control behaviors from within themselves instead of relying on others. The program's primary focus is to have clients work through the resident hierarchy. Clients must respect authority, take on responsibilities, and work with fellow clients in a team environment. And she's going to talk to us a little bit about addiction today. And she also brought along Marty, who's going to tell us some of his personal story and share with us. So please welcome Kathy Stills and Marty.
Addictions are more than bad habits or self-destructive behavior. Much of our culture is geared towards enticing us away from ourselves into externally directed activity and diverting the mind from boredom and distress. For the hardcore addict, life is about escape. At the core of addiction, there is emptiness based in hopelessness and fear. The addict dreads the present moment. And with the drug, the addict is briefly liberated from the burdens of the past and fears of the future. The drug is an emotional anesthetic, an antidote to feelings of emptiness, a tonic against fatigue and boredom, alienation, a stress reliever, a social lubricant, a flight from feelings of personal inadequacy and distress. The meaning of all addictions could be defined as endeavors at controlling our life experience with the help of external remedies. We use something outside of ourselves to feel good, better, or to avoid pain. Most everyone does this to some extent. Eating, shopping, the internet. As I speak, I invite you to look at some of your own behaviors, not that they're necessarily addictions. But all of us, to some extent, use something outside of ourselves to feel better. All behaviors are on a continuum. Any behavior or substance, if taken to the extreme, can be deadly. Unfortunately, all external remedies of helping us feel better are a double-edged sword. What characterizes an addiction, and when is it a problem? The addict persists despite long-term negative consequences. Addiction is any repeated behavior in which a person feels compelled to persist regardless of the negative impact it has on the person's life or the life of the other people around them. Distinguishing features of all addictions: compulsive engagement with the behavior or preoccupation with the behavior. Impaired control and judgment. Persistence of relapse despite evidence of harm. Dissatisfaction, irritability, and intense craving when it is not immediately available. The severity of addictions are shaped by many influences: social, political, economic, personal and family history, and genetic predisposition. And a lot of how we classify whether something is bad or good is a social issue. Being a workaholic in our society is esteemed. Being a heroin addict is not okay. Addictions, even as they resemble human yearnings, are about desire often more than attainment. This is particularly true for people that are shopaholics, people that like to shop. It's more the quest for the item than the actual attaining the item. Any passion can become an addiction, and so how do we distinguish the two? The main question is, who is in charge, the individual or the behavior? You no longer feel you have the power to stop. It feels stronger than you. It gives you a false sense of pleasure, pleasure that invariably turns into pain. And how it looks on the outside is not relevant. The key is the person's internal relationship to the passion and its related behaviors. There's no freedom or assertion of joy or your true self with an addiction, whereas a passion enriches your life and enriches those around you. It sucks your energy. Some of you may remember the Little Shop of Horrors, the musical, and Seymour had this exotic flower shop, and he had this plant, Audrey II, that wasn't doing well. And accidentally one day he cut his finger, and he noticed that as the plant got a little of his blood, the plant began to thrive. So, guess what? He ended up giving the plant more and more of his own blood. But then he was so diminished, he had to look for other sources of blood. You may guess how it is. Not good. So eventually, this is a metaphor for addiction. It eventually destroys his business and leads him to do things that he would not otherwise do. So if you haven't caught that little musical, it's very cute. Okay, who is at risk? Okay, there are pretty much all of us are at risk for an addiction. You need three things to have an addiction. You need to have a susceptible organism. And the things that make you susceptible are emotional isolation, exclusion, powerlessness, early abuse and trauma, and some of the personality traits that often underlie addiction are poor self-regulation, a lack of a healthy sense of yourself, a sense of deficient emptiness, and impaired impulse control. You need a drug with an addictive potential. So the more addictive the drug, the stronger the hold will be on you. Not very many people are addicted to broccoli. But other things, yes. And the third thing you need to have an addiction is you need stress. And, of course, we all know that we live in one of the most stressful places in the United States, according to the LA Times. Okay, so what leads to stress? Uncertainty, a lack of information, and a loss of control. The less effective your own internal happiness system is, the more driven you are to seek joy and relief through drug taking or through other compulsive pursuits outside of yourself. Why are addictions so difficult? Why can't they just say no? One of the consequences of addiction is the vulnerability to craving and relapse after many weeks of abstinence. And what the research shows is actually the brain changes. So when you use drugs or alcohol, your brain changes. And it makes long-lasting effects in your brain. This is one of the reasons they use the word recovering. Because a person is always, even if they stop using drugs or alcohol, their brain is moving in the direction of trying to heal, but never fully recovers. So the impairment to the brain undermines voluntary control, decision-making ability, and impulse regulation. And when the brain becomes diseased, the functions that become pathological are the person's emotional life, their thought processes, and their behavior. The impaired organ of decision-making needs to initiate its own healing. So the concept of choice, then, is a lot less clear because we've disturbed our brain and now our brain has to revert to normal, whatever that is. The worse the addiction, the greater the brain abnormality and the greater the obstacles to recovery. And also the younger a person begins using drugs or alcohol, the greater the damage and the harder it is. The most dominant aspect of the brain development is the emotional environment. Now, there's three things that we need for a healthy brain. We need nutrition, and that's early nutrition even before the baby's born. You need physical security, so you need to be in a safe physical environment to have a healthy brain. And you also need consistent emotional nurturing from at least one reliable, protective, psychologically present and reasonably non-stressed adult. That's the key word there, non-stressed adult. So a parent, oftentimes if they are depressed or overly anxious or overly stressed, will encode this in the child's brain. It's not anybody's fault, but the child oftentimes is more reactive to stress. Now, I'm going to add something so nobody feels guilty. Not every addict has been a victim of child abuse, and not every person that abuses drugs or alcohol, you know what I'm saying. It isn't a direct correlation, but there are a lot of contributing factors that early abuse and abandonment affects the forming of the brain and also affect a person's ability to form intimate relationships. So the inability or flight from feelings greatly increases the motivation to use drugs. And people who are susceptible to addiction have a constant need to fill their minds and bodies with external sources of comfort. So the failure of self-regulation and the inability to create an internal, stable atmosphere to bring down the highs and up the lows, to feel okay with being in one's skin, and the ability to not act on feelings. I'll have you do a little exercise. If I ask you to raise your right hand, most of you can do that pretty easily. Think of the color green. You can do that. Okay, now I'm going to ask you to conjure up the feeling of joy. That's more difficult. And then double your heart rate. That's really hard. So what you want to do is you want to drive your car, your life, with your front wheels. And that's what you think and what you do. Because if you're driving your car according to your feelings, you don't have very much control. So you want it, the way you can take control is what you think and what you do. And so Hope House uses a lot of cognitive therapy tools to help people do this, to slow down and to begin to look at their thinking and look at their thoughts and their beliefs, and also just to realize that they have choices about their behaviors. They don't just have to act on feelings. Buddha said, your worst enemy cannot hurt you as much as your own thoughts when you haven't mastered them, which I think is very, very true. We have freedom only when we strive for awareness. Choice implies consciousness and requires a high degree of consciousness, and without it, you do not have choice. One of the tools that Hope House uses is a bench. And it's used like timeout, if some of you are familiar with timeout. And if somebody breaks a rule, they have to go and sit on the bench. And they have to stay on the bench. They can't leave the bench until they're allowed to get off the bench, a person approaches them. Now, the benches are placed right near the door. So every time the person goes to the bench, they are making a choice. They're making a choice to sit down or leave treatment. And every time they do that, they're consciously making a choice for healing and recovery while doing that. And over time, what this does is it helps people internalize limit setting. So the limits come from inside of them rather than outside of them. All of a sudden, they don't need to rely on mom and dad, social workers, probation, parole officers, jails, and prisons. The limits can come from inside. So that's one of the goals. Conscious awareness is very important in terms of having free choice. Two things are needed to promote healing: changing the external environment and modifying the internal environment. The thing you have to that people don't realize is just how strong addictions are, and they are triggered in a fraction of a second. So they're very, very powerful. They're triggered very rapidly. And somebody has to understand the triggers that led up to the abuse or the substance or the behavior. Hope House helps clients learn how to take responsibility for themselves in a lot of different ways. With the exchange the external environment, we have an environment where it's supportive. We don't allow any threats of violence. It's a very structured environment. We take roll call every hour. People are moved through the program through a hierarchy of responsibilities. So as you stay with the program, you get increasing amounts of privileges as you move through the program. Privileges and responsibility that go hand in hand as you move through the program. We want people to have a sense of self-compassion and curiosity about themselves without judgment. Curiosity about their thoughts and their beliefs, and curiosity about their emotions and their internal world. One of the things that's really important about healing and recovery is motivation. That's a big one, right? Intention and attention. So you need to have the intention of changing, and then you have to pay attention. So if any of you have ever tried to lose weight, you have to have the intention, but then you have to focus a lot of energy and awareness on the behaviors, or it doesn't work. So intention and attention. Now, one of the things that we do or that happens at Hope House is we have a long wait to get in for county-funded beds. People have to show up for screening interviews, and they have to come on time. If they're late, they're turned away and told they need to come back on the next interview date. Well, guess what? Their program has already started because they realize they have to follow rules, and people aren't going to make exceptions for them. That's very important. Then, once they come to the screening interview and they're accepted into the program, they're on a waiting list. And then to keep their position on the waiting list, they have to call in every day. Well, what this does is it builds motivation for recovery and healing, because then every day they have to choose, I want to change. I want my life to be different. Now, if they drop off the waiting list, guess what? They have to start the process all over again. But the longer that people wait, oftentimes, the better the success, because they have more motivation, and it's very difficult. Now, if some of you have known people in treatment, don't get discouraged. The average number of times that somebody goes into treatment for a drug or alcohol addiction is 9. That's a lot. But that's the average. So it is a very difficult addiction, and it's they're very, very powerful. So keep trying, even if there's setbacks. One of the things that happens for people when they are in an addiction or have an addictive behavior is denial. And denial tends to progress at the same rate the addiction does. So as a person gets more entrenched in their addiction, their denial becomes stronger, and they don't realize the impact it's having on their life or the lives of others. And one of the things I often ask people to do is, if they're not sure if they truly have a problem, is to go home and write out a list of how would you know if you really had an addiction? What things would be happening in your life, externally or internally? Health issues, being arrested, your wife leaving you. Just make a list. So you can do this for, food or internet games or anything. How would you know if it was a problem? And then put it away, and then in 3 to 6 months, bring it out again and read the list. The issue is, it's a way for you to kind of confront yourself and see if your addiction is progressing, because oftentimes the denial will progress along with the disease. Hope House uses a lot of different tools. We want clients to think through choices. We want clients to learn delay of gratification, which is very important. So you have to wait for the things you want. And one of the ways we do this is through a chain of command. So people cannot just directly go up to staff and ask staff a question. They have to wait. They have to ask one person who asks another person who asks. And this process, even though it's not necessarily efficient, requires the person to wait. And they build frustration tolerance. And another thing that we do is we have a lot of writing that's required and a lot of paperwork. And if your paperwork isn't right, you don't get the privilege or the position. And so there's a lot of responsibility to paying close attention to the detail. It's always the detail that messes us up in life if we can't get the detail right. So Hope House works on a lot of different areas in terms of helping clients be aware of their external world and their internal world. One of the things we do is we do a lot of individual therapy with clients. We do a lot of therapeutic groups to help people begin to identify unresolved emotions, let go of resentment and guilt, which will kill you, and enter the healing process. And now I'd like Marty, he's going to share his story, and then we would be happy to answer questions too after Marty shares.
I don't think I need the stool, and I probably don't even need the microphone, but we're going to use it while it's here. Anyway, my name is Marty, and this is a first for me, so I want to say thanks for allowing us to be here today. I guess I first started when I was like 14, and at that time I was pretty much just a carefree kid. And I moved into a new neighborhood and didn't really know anything about drugs or alcohol or addiction, but the people I met seemed to know a lot about it. So, you know, when the opportunities came up, I felt like, well, okay, here I am. You know, these are going to be my new friends. I need to fit in. I need to be a part of. Sure, I'll give it a whirl. I'll give it a try. And, that's where it started for me. I grew up in Santa Ana. And we moved out from the Midwest, and so the whole environment was new. Now, Kathy mentioned something that I wanted to touch on a little bit early, is that, you know, a lot of people, a lot of addicts who really become addicts, first of all, like a lot of people can use drugs or alcohol their whole lives and not become an addict. There are thousands of people who do that. Why? How? You know, personally, I don't know. But I know what addiction is, and I know what an addict is, and I became that person. I when I started being just a kid, I was pretty impressionable. So, you know, I wanted to just fit in and be a part of the group. But Kathy mentioned, you know, a lot of people, sadly enough, grew up with a lot of abuse, whether it's family abuse, whether it's outside abuse. There's a lot of young kids go through trials and tribulations when their families have been divorced or their parents fight a lot. A lot of people, and for me, what was really different for me is that, when I grew up, my father was very abusive to my mother, and many a night as a child, I'd hide in my room and stick my head under the covers and the pillows just to try to get away from the screams and the crying I'd heard at night. And when you're a kid, your parents really mean the world to you. But when you're really young, and I'm gonna go back to probably 7 when that first started for me. And for the next 3-4 years, that continued on. My dad became an alcoholic, take it out on my mom, and when my mom wasn't home, he started taking it out on me and my brother. And, for us, it really didn't matter. We didn't have to go out and rob a gas station to get beat up. We didn't have to go out and break into our neighbor's home to get beat up. It seemed like, when mom wasn't there, he had to find another outlet, and that became us. Now, I'm not going to say that is the reason it started for me, but what I am going to say is that at a very young age, I had a lot of family issues, and when you're that young, it's almost impossible not to start taking a look at yourself and maybe take a look at what you might have done to create this family atmosphere that is, just really tearing you and your family apart. I came into Hope House in 92. Actually, 91. I was there for 6 weeks. I got discharged. I cried all the way out the door. 6 weeks later, thank God I came back. And that's where it started for me. I wanted to tell you that And you know, it's something else, and whether this goes back to childhood or whatever, but for me, and you know, it's kind of sorry to say it still fits in today, but for me, I never ever, and I grew up with neighborhoods of 50 people. And you know, when I was through my teenagers, I was probably one of the most popular person in two sets of neighborhoods. Everybody wanted to know what Marty was doing this weekend, what Marty was doing that night, what was going on with Marty. Everybody wanted to know what I was doing. And throughout all that, I never ever felt I fit in with these friends of mine. I always felt like an outsider. And that's something I could never understand that. I spent my whole teenage life and young adult life trying to please and take care and help everybody else. And my sacrifices were acceptable if it helped somebody outside of me. And, you know, my addiction started really bad when I got to about mid-20s. My mid-20s is when it really started to affect me, my friends, my family. My family had moved out of state, so I thought, you know, wow, I'm in heaven here. I have nobody, no authority, nobody to turn to. I can do what I want when I want, and I'm my own boss. And you know, that lasted for about a month until I started realizing I started getting out of control. I started losing my friends. I started losing my family. I stole from the closest people in my life, my best friends. I stole from my everybody in my circle. I started affected in a negative way, and they all started looking at me in a negative way. And you know, I don't have a lot of time here, and you know, obviously, you know, I could go on for hours and hours, and I don't want to bore you, but I also want to just give you something to think about. And addiction for me, it put me in a place where it's really hard for me still to explain after all these years, but I felt so outside of everybody. Like all of you are somebody in life. You all represent something positive in life. But me, never. I never did. I never could. So I got to a point where instead of, as a young kid, using it occasionally, and I got to a point where I started hurting so bad inside, started feeling so alone and so empty. It hurt so bad, I didn't know how to escape that. I didn't know how to get rid of that. I'd cry at night. I'd hide by myself at night. Night after night after night and day after day. I'd be in the constant daze and fog because I just felt I had no purpose. I felt I was like an alien in a world of beautiful people. I felt so outside of it. So I turned to drugs to escape the pain I felt inside me. And this went on for years. And I stole and I hurt people and I caused lots of problems because I didn't know. That's the only way I knew how to go day to day is to use drugs to escape what I felt inside me. And that was just pure pain. You know, the thing is, addiction, and this is really sad, because when you get to a point in your life where you don't just completely give it up on yourself, there's nowhere else to turn but that. I mean, you can imagine when you break your foot, you fall down a flight of stairs and you crack a bone. Now, you imagine how that pain felt at that moment and maybe even for the next hour, but think about how that felt day after day after day after day for years. And for me, that's how that became. I had to escape, and one night I tried to escape, and I woke up in the middle of the night and realized I was still alive. So I thought, no, this isn't going to work, so I tried to escape again. Woke up the next morning and I said, wow, what's going on here? I'm giving it my best shot. It's not working. So I reached out for some help, and I realized that, you know, I had to change my life, or this was going to keep going on and on. And I knew nothing about recovery. I knew nothing about addiction, addicts. I knew nothing. I never even heard the term. But my sister told me about a place called Hope House. She knew somebody like me. that went in there, and that girl was living a responsible and respectable life. I said, okay, I'm going to give it a shot. And when I walked in those doors, and it's really, really kind of a brilliant thing for me, is when I walked through those doors for the very first time, I felt like I was at home for the first time in 20 years. Now, at this point, I was 32. So from 14, I spent, you know, 6-7 years of just casual use, and I spent another 10-12 years of just physical abusive years. And when I walked through those doors, I felt like I was at home. And when I told you 6 weeks later I got thrown out, well, I cried all the way out those doors, because I knew I needed to be there. And when my sister took me to her house, and I couldn't walk in her house, I had to sit out on the front porch, and I cried for an hour, because I felt like, once again, I'm an alien out in this world. I do not belong with you, with anybody. I don't belong with you people. I'm different. I'm a bad seed. And you know, some people can explain those feelings and emotions. Some of us can't. It's something that was a part of me my whole life. But what I got into this place, what really started turning things around for me, is I found a place, and this is really incredible, still kind of shapes me up, is that a place to actually believe that I could become a better person. I was an addict, and for me, I was the bottom of the barrel. It's something that, you know, people walk on when they see you. And I could not fathom the fact that there was a place who actually wanted to help me, who believed in me. And I fought that place hard for a long time. But I knew I couldn't leave, and every day I started learning more and more and more about it. I had a therapist I saw, which I fought that because I thought I had to be nuts to see a therapist. You're a crazy person if you got to go to therapy. But I kept doing it. And then they have these activities where you sit in a group of people and you share about your life, about how things have gone for you. Sitting there with a bunch of strangers and telling them about your life. And that was just a complete new concept for me too. And you know, the thing is what I wanted to say is that, you know, Hope House and recovery programs, they actually start at the very bottom. And, you know, they don't actually see you for who you think you are, but they start to look at you for who the person you can become. And just that little concept in itself really started to collect with me. And as time went on, I just started to learn about, you know, the past issues and problems in my life, how to look at myself in a mirror. And let me tell you something. That's about the hardest thing I've ever done as a sober person, is actually put a mirror in front of me and look at it. That took a long time to do that. But, you know what, the place, it gave me an opportunity to just try to become, find out kind of who I am, try to be a person, try to understand the path I took and why. And I spent 2 years there, thank God. That place at the time was a 12 to 15 month program, but for people like me who needed more time, I was given all the time I needed as long as I was trying to improve myself. And I spent 2 years there. And I graduated in January 94, and you know, at that time it was the greatest thing in my life. Really, I spent 2 years there, and I walked out just for the first time in 30 years feeling proud of myself and feeling good about my life and who I am today. I struggle being here with people that I don't know. I struggle out on the streets talking, carrying on a conversation, feeling capable of doing that. But you know, these are all things, all my struggles today are things that I just challenge myself with. And you know, in the past, when any time I felt bad or negative about myself or struggled in life, I would turn to drugs and I would abuse myself with them. And you know, today I don't have to do that. And I kind of in closing, and Kathy brought something else up, is I was kind of fortunate. I went through it, And I got it the first time, but you know, most people don't. And I've watched many friends pass away, and I have family members today who struggle with addiction. But, you know, I just know that, you know, I can't give up on them. Because, you know, I didn't give up on myself, and people stood by me. And, you know, it's one of the hardest things in the world to have to deal with, whether you're sitting over there or you or me. But I'm just saying, if you know that person, you know, you get to a point where you've got to, you try, and when they don't make it, you have to take a step back and say, now you have to do it. I'm going to be here for you, but I can't do it for you. And if that was ever you, you know, you know what it's like. And if you have family members who struggle today or friends who struggle today, you just give them hope. But to know there are places out there that will help them if they just take that first step to request it. So, you know, I don't know, you know, what I share could be a benefit or not. I don't do a lot of public speaking, obviously. And I was really strapped for time. And I said last night, I said, do I need to write down the speech? But I said to myself, it's not going to really matter. When that moment comes, you know, whatever seems to flow is what you've got to do. So, you know, Hope House and their whole format of not just bringing you in and then telling you how you have to become now and saying, you've done great, send you on your way. They gave me an opportunity to take a look at who I was, work on my problems, and I had many problems. Give you a chance to change your life. Give me a chance to hold a bank account for the first time in my life, to go out and get a job, be responsible, pay my bills. These are all things I've never had in my life. And this program gave you all the steps to get you restarted in life, everything you needed to get restarted. So, you know, I can stand here today, and I graduated in 94, and I'm 19 years of sobriety now, and January 94. And, you know, I've got sisters who are alcoholics who are 15 years sober. I've got a brother who's got 8 years sober, and I've got one sister who's still using today, and it's sad. But, you know, this thing, addiction, can just tear your world apart, those of you and everyone around you. But I'm just saying that I stand here today to say that, you know, recovery is a tough challenge, but it's important that we support everybody who needs it and give them a shot. And I'm just grateful I had the opportunity. And I just want to say thanks for allowing us to be here today. Thank you.